Good morning and welcome to me. Good morning, Sherry. Good morning, Ashwini.
Good morning, Bob.
In all spiritual traditions, inquiry into the nature of me is encouraged because it dissipates the illusion of an ego self where none exists. While meditation is universally prescribed as a means to see the ego as a fabrication of the mind, the Buddha understood the difficulty of going up against one's conditioning. He offered the practice of no harm as an antidote to the hubris of ownership that obscures a sense of responsibility and respect towards that which sustains all of us. From Good Life, a Zen Precepts Retreat. For example, when I see a furry caterpillar making its way across an expanse of highway with not much chance of getting to the other side, and I pick it up and carry it away from the road and put it on a tree, I love that. I love the tenderness I feel toward that creature, toward the life that it is, toward its innocence. There it is, going along in life with no idea that it is on a highway with speeding cars, just like us. We go through life not knowing where we are in the big picture and whether a truck is barreling down on us, and in a minute we'll be squashed flat. I project all of that onto the little caterpillar. I see my life in that little creature, the tenderness I feel for it, I then feel for myself. And I can know tenderness is who I am. That is, tenderness is another word for the compassion that informs all life. As I become more able to experience tenderness inside me, I am more able to experience it outside me. And as I feel it more outside me, I can feel it more inside me. I don't want to do anything to harm anything, because there's nothing that harms something else that doesn't harm me. And I don't want something as tender as myself to be harmed. All right, I'm going to bring on our first caller here. First caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Sherry. This is Dixie from Texas.
Hey, Dixie.
Man, I've called in a couple of times. I called in Friday, and the dog barked. I know you heard that. And then I didn't know if I was supposed to unmute. I disconnected myself, and I tried to get back on, and I couldn't. So I'm still kind of in the last week's assignment, and conditioning is saying, well, you can't talk about that. We're on the next week. So.
Oh yeah, you can't talk about those insights. We gotta stay current. Gotta be with the program. Who needs that? Yeah. Huh?
So, a little content about time. I had two shoulder surgeries, and the last one didn't seem like it was progressing. And both physical therapists assured me that it couldn't be torn again, and I saw the doctor, and he wasn't that concerned at 4 months. And so I finally went and got an MRI, and it tore back in May. So I wasted, quote, time going to therapy 3 days a week. And so then I'm just watching how conditioning, I have an appointment for a second opinion next week. But conditioning is trying to make plans because my plans have been disrupted, and I've discovered I can't make plans until I know more from the doctor. So,
well, Dixie, may I right here at this juncture? Yes, you can. You can make plans. And like the rest of us, you make them with full knowledge that they may never come to fruition. If all goes well, whatever that means, right? If all goes the way it looks like it's going to go now, then that's what I'm going to be doing. That's where I'll be, and that's what I'll be doing. But we never know that. And so we make the plan, and then when the time comes, we find out, can I do that? Can I not do that? But what happens with that approach is, you don't get tortured. Those ego voices aren't saying, well, this and that, but you can't know, and you can't, you know, no, just whatever it is, put it on the calendar. When the time comes, you'll know, yes, I can.
Yeah.
No, I can't.
Till I know his schedule. But it looks like total reverse shoulder replacement, another major surgery. And things on my calendar, a class reunion, a vacation in March, those kind of things. But I did get to the point of, since I don't really know, I can enjoy, I just got to that place. I have access to this beautiful pool. I live in this beautiful place. I drive a lot, and conditioning complains about it, but I get to listen to the radio show when I drive. And I don't know if it's an argument between ego or if it's just really helping me pull out of the suffering of I can just enjoy what I have right now, and I don't have to think about
and
what's going to happen.
That's right. That's all we've ever got, right? That's it. We don't. It's not so clear to us in the rest of life. You know, the body's working. Everybody's alive. Got the job. Whatever it is, you know. But it could all be over in a second. Mm-hmm. We don't know. So yes, absolutely. And the one thing that, of course, for all of us, adds the greatest amount of enjoyment to our life is putting paid to those ego voices. We're not having that conversation.
Yeah, I was thinking about
it. It's a beautiful day. I'm going to get in the pool, and then I'm going to go for a drive and listen to the radio show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you commented about a conversation going nowhere, and that's kind of what I saw with ego, because it's blaming the physical therapist for really discouraging me from getting an MRI and telling me everything is fine. But then I had my own internal voice that felt like something was wrong, that was always talking me out of it. So, you know, it just keeps going back and forth. And the beauty of it, too, is I cleared off all my therapy appointments, so now I have time to do things.
Yes, exactly. There's always a bright spot when we're open to looking for it, isn't there?
Right. Yeah. And then dog interruption, I've been thinking about dogs, and they're the bane of my existence. But if you could be more like a dog, I mean, they have a routine, but they don't really have a plan. They kind of just go with the flow.
That's right. And if they feel like barking, they just bark. And they don't worry about it, and they don't feel guilty about it.
No, they don't. If they get a broken leg, they don't moan about it.
That's exactly right. Exactly. Speaking of which, I am in the parking lot of the doctor's office right now, where I just had got the results of the x-ray that says I am good to go. Bones have healed. 6 weeks in, bones have healed, and I'm good. I'm cleared for pickleball.
That's awesome.
So it's a bright future, Dixie. It's
good
great to hear your voice.
All right. You too, Sherry.
Stay in
Thank
touch.
You.
Okay. Bye. Gotcha.
Thank you, Dixie. That cleared to play pickleball. It's very exciting.
Isn't that good? I mean. Yep. All right.
All right. I'm going to bring on the next caller here. Next caller, you're live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Renee in Oregon. Hello?
Hey, Renee.
Hi. I was looking at this week's assignment, and of course it's wonderful to bring tenderness to everything, and looking at whenever it starts to get, you know, a little rough in the head, you know, you can go to tenderness and it's really nice. I was also looking at it with, you know, leadership, because I coach a lot of leaders, and you know, it's our job to hold people accountable and give them feedback. Sometimes it's not as pleasant. It's not pleasant. And I was looking at tenderness in that realm, and I know it's a little different maybe than what we've been talking about mostly, but I think it's kind of the same, because, you know, tenderness can be seen as weakness or not being strong or not holding the boundaries, things like that. But I actually see it really differently, and what I realized was the way that the monastery used to be run sort of models that tenderness. But sometimes coming at it, when I first would go to the monastery, it didn't feel tender necessarily sometimes. But then as I kept going and kept practicing and really seeing the heart of it, so to speak, then I could really feel that tenderness. And I sort of see leadership that way. Like, you know, you're not always making people happy, but you are sort of helping them grow and move forward with in their life at work. So,
yes, well, and if I may just reflect, the insight is we're not making ego happy.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Right? It's that's the difference, right? The whole of a conditioned society is based on making ego happy and not make ego unhappy. And so
right.
That whereas if you think about what practice is based on is it absolutely can see the authenticity of every human being. And the orientation of practice is we're going to point the ego out, for which ego will be very unhappy and we'll win no popularity contest, right?
Right.
But we hold
right.
the heart and we assist people to see their own heart by sidestepping the unhappy ego. And you're absolutely
yeah.
right. That is a model for everything in the world. And I would project, right, Renee, that the reason we don't want to give feedback to people and have to harden our hearts before, but that's what the conditioned world says, right? The strong person is unemotional and impersonal and can deliver feedback because they have to. But we recognize what it costs us to do that, right? To have that tenderness that you're talking about is a place of causing no harm. And so,
right,
yes,
right.
we have to cut. If we're in that position, what we're trained to do is cut ourselves off from the heart and offer the feedback from this within quotes cold place. Or as we see in practice, right, you connect to the tenderness in you, to the authenticity in you, to the sweetness and the love that is who you are, and that place of tenderness can absolutely see the difference between being and behavior.
Yeah.
Yes, I think
yes.
you're a wonderful
yes.
human being. And here are all these different ways in which I think you're wonderful. And here are some behaviors that we would like mm-hmm. you to look at, right? It's
mm-hmm.
an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a criticism. It's not a judgment. It's
right.
information based on this is the organization we work for, and these are the behaviors that the organization wants. It has nothing to do with who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, not all of us do a practice like this to know that. So inevitably, you know that the ego is going to receive that, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
or not. If they're not, you can have a wonderful conversation. If it does, then it's a much more difficult conversation. But as long as
yeah.
I can stay present and keep reflecting that I don't see anything wrong with you, and
mm-hmm.
let's have a conversation mm-hmm. about these behaviors, it's such a different place of leadership.
Yeah. It really is. And when you said practice sees the authenticity in everyone, I've actually had that experience with in the middle of talking with someone in that way. And I'm always rooting for them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm always like, I want to help them get to that authentic place. And I think coming from that perspective as well, I'm usually transparent about that. Like, this is what we're doing to help, you know, change these behaviors, and it goes really well typically.
Yeah.
But there are some people who just cannot get out of that ego conversation.
Yeah.
So, and that's okay too. You know,
yeah.
they make that choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. And the only
yeah.
place in me when I'm interacting with that person is to stay in the love, and not get
right.
triggered.
And see their sweetness too, and that's what I see
yes.
a lot is their potential, their sweetness, their authenticity, and that way I can model that I think more in that when I'm in that place of doing it that way, yeah.
And the awareness that everybody makes their own journey, so
yes.
I
yes.
can't be responsible for them either disidentifying or seeing that I'm coming from this place of being on their side. Right,
yeah.
they have,
yeah.
they get.
Yeah.
That's the other beautiful thing about practice. Everybody gets to have their own experience and make their journey with the signal that there's support available. And we're here anytime you want to turn to that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, thank you. I love looking at this because it's a place that practice. I mean, I practice with it, but it's nice to have ways to think about or to practice with helping other people do it this way, if that makes any sense, yeah. Or modeling it and coaching other leaders. Yeah, it's really, really, really helpful. Yeah.
Really helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks for that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Renee. And I'm going to bring on the next caller here. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is June.
Hey, June.
My experiences of sweetness usually revolve around critters. And things like the other day, there was a little frog in my den.
And it sounds like the title of a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I saw it and I just loved it. I mean, I just wanted to get that frog its best life. I've encountered little frogs in houses before, and they try to get away from you. Well, this one did not. I project it knew how it had its best interest at heart. So I walked up to it and simply picked it up and took it out and put it in the garden. And the other day, I was out on the back 40. That's a little joke. Just running around, and there was a baby turtle.
Oh, my.
And the mind, I mean, it was out there in its element, and the mind wanted to help it somehow to do something. Because there was a human here that could see it, and that's always dangerous. And I said, no, this is the back 40. There's nobody out here but me and you. You go about your business. And so sweetness took both forms there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And to be in touch with that in ourselves, I think, you know, it'd be wonderful to make it a practice, right? To actually look for things that evoke that response in us, that put us in touch with that. Yeah, because it is the quickest trip to this is who we are. This is what authenticity is, and I think what the conversations today indicate for us. Is, I think this is not just projection, that it's much easier when it's something that is so obviously unconditioned, that with our fellow critters, it can get more challenging because it's harder for us to see one another's innocence and sweetness. When we do, you know, it's wonderful and beautiful, but it's trickier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Especially these days.
Yeah. Well,
and,
yeah.
And I really work at it. I really try to be in that place of we're all just doing the best we can here.
Yes. Yes. I was just going there myself, June. I was listening to someone give a whole kind of a lecture on that. On that as a spiritual perspective, to realize that that everybody is doing the best that they can all the time, and that can be challenging to accept that because we have so much conditioning of no, they certainly I could have done better, you could do better, they certainly could do better, and so really to practice with that until it is our intuitive, there's an intuitive knowing about that, that there's a clarity that that is true, and then to go forward from that place. It's a critical practice.
Yeah.
Try to see everyone like a little frog or a turtle, a baby turtle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, June.
Thank you.
Thank you, June. I love that conversation. To me, where I kind of go with that is that once I'm practicing that, so the turtle or the frog or the whatever, then it's like, well, I actually want to take care of everything in life. You know, I want to take care of the dirty napkin, the unclean
yes.
window, whatever it is.
Yes, yes, for it, right? I think exactly. it's actually in the key where we talk about washing the car for the car. An act of love for the car.
All righty, I'm going to bring on the next caller here. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta. Can you hear me? This is Greta.
Yes. Hey, Greta.
Hi. Yeah, so the thing that I took away initially from the assignment was my belief, kind of tied with our last assignment, is that this is my body and I can do what I want with it and when I want with it, which as I get older turns out not to be so true. And just that idea of ownership again that we talk about rather than this is life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's, I think, in the assignment where the teddy bear gets to be possessed by ego, right? That whatever's claiming ownership over the body isn't life. It's that sense of ownership is an ego perspective that says, this is my body. I can do whatever I want with it, as opposed to that place that you were pointing us to, which is, no, it's actually life's body. And so it's not owned. I get to steward it, right? Because I happen to be in it for the period of time that I'm alive. But I do it with that same level of reverence as I would to the frog or the turtle.
Yes, and that's certainly a lesson, because I am very driven by the to-do list, no matter how stringent my approach to it is. The exercising and the stretching and the other caring for the body doesn't get to the list or get to the top of the list, and very often gets kicked off, even if it was. So,
well, Greta,
yes.
You're not driven. You're
right.
Not.
Yes.
So you're being driven by that to-do list, right?
Yes.
It's so important. I mean, I've been noticing this. In my practice, how important it is to give credit where credit is due for
yes,
suffering,
yes.
right?
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
It seems like you have a choice about the way you, if we state that I can choose between self-care and my to-do list, and I don't because I'm driven by the to-do list, then it somehow means that you're responsible for the fact that you don't do X, Y, Z. But to really clearly state that there is a system of conditioning that drives one towards the to-do list and removes the option of self-care. Now, that is something that I can be aware of and then choose differently from a different place.
Yes. Yes. And it's also very interesting to me that from a different place, I have to choose that too. Because if I'm just getting up in the morning and I fall right into a habit pattern, I don't look for that centered place from which I'm going to see my day unfold. And that
right.
is the challenge to me at this point. And I will say that being unmuted yesterday and today is like it creates such expansiveness to be participating live in this way that then my whole ego doesn't quite have as much a hold on me. So there's all this expansion in awareness to be present to these calls by being called upon.
Yes. Well, and the process takeaway from that is, and it's what I've been seeing in my practice, is that if there isn't a structure that interrupts the ego in the morning, the pattern just plays out. And so if something like this call produces that level of expansiveness, and there's the awareness that the habituated conditioned pattern kicks in and needs to be interrupted before it kicks in, then I know how to practice with that. I know how to insert the interrupt.
Yes.
The life interrupt.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greta.
Go happy.
Thank you, Greta. And I believe we have time for one more call here.
All right.
You find them in the queue? All right. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
And this is Tony from Athens.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Sherry. Well, first, really glad to hear your good news.
I know.
Pickleball. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very, very good. Gosh, so it's cue practice here, and I'm, what I was looking at this morning and then on this call, so I'm really into the interviewing process. I've been doing that every morning. And was doing it this morning, and it does tie in, I think, to the assignment. So sometimes working on certain things, I get identified with this part, kind of a whiny voice that says, I don't know what to do. You know, just kind of a little bit of a panic or just kind of unsure. And sometimes in the past, the tendency would be to look to conditioned mind for what to do. Because there's this, you know, not knowing what to do. But it was really sweet this morning. So I was interviewing, and then that part kind of came up in the interview. And it was great because I'm sitting there interviewing, and then so it didn't go to conditioned mind. And then listening back, I tried to listen with affection and appreciation and gentleness and gratitude and wonder with all the words. And so then it was really tender. And then I could go to wonder and say, yeah, so there's not knowing quite what to do right here, right now, on this, what we're working on. And be in such a different place, not panic, not like, gotta go look to conditioned mind for help. Just be in that more curious and wonder, like, oh, well, let's just see, and I don't know, something like that. So it was.
And Tony, did it shift things for you, or did you just
Yeah, very much so.
Okay,
much.
I mean, did you come out with a sense of direction?
A little bit, yeah, and it's like
okay. Go ahead.
Go. It just kind of unfolded, you know.
Yeah,
it was kind
good.
Of like, yeah.
Good, because the area of concern that arose for me with that is we could get pulled into something like that and then get to taking care of this whiny voice that doesn't know what to do and just stay in that rather than moving on with what it is that we started out to do, which could turn out to be kind of a bit of a scam. Right. And so to realize that actually you don't need any of that. Right. So there's somebody who doesn't know what to do. Well, they're probably not the person qualified to do the job.
Oh.
So you might I mean, it might be a teaching moment, you know, as we were talking about with somebody earlier, but it might just be an opportunity to realize that the person who is interviewing, the person who is not being interviewed, but the interviewer is the capable person. That's the person who can do whatever it is that needs to be done. So that person might want to mentor somebody else in this operation, but it's actually not a requirement.
Wow. That's a whole, it's very, kind of my, I'm sort of like, oh.
Yeah. So, it, you know, sometimes we just say, oh, well, you don't know what to, that's okay. And turn to that, that person who is capable of being so disidentified, so at center, that they are completely free of all of the details of the situation. That is a capable, competent person who can accomplish whatever needs to be accomplished.
Oh, okay. Well, that I appreciate that, because I might have gone on thinking differently, but yeah, that now I don't need to take care of the little whiny, I don't know what to do. Need to take care of that.
Yeah, get him a little book and have him sit in the corner and look at the little book while you do whatever it is that needs to get done.
Wow. Yeah, so it seems like something to kind of, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, well, and one of the places that it feels to me would be interesting is to get a really strong sense of the energy of that person who does the interviewing. That's probably a poor way to phrase it, but that disidentified, centered, able to be there, mentoring, energy. Get a strong sense of that.
Okay.
Rather than focusing on somebody who's feeling small and inadequate.
Okay, because I really appreciate that, because then what I thought about, looked at when we do two-handed recording and listening, what's one of the benefits is being the mentor.
That's right, that's exactly right.
And that's the benefit, and
that's
not
right.
To take care, it's the being the mentor in that technique or whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let us know. All right. Thanks, Joni.
Thank you. Go happy.
Go happy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tony. And Sherry and Ashwin, that brings us to the end of today's call. And we had a lot of people in the queue today, so I just encourage everyone to put themselves back in tomorrow and hopefully we'll call on then.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bob. Really appreciate
it. Thank you. Go happy.
Go happy.